Hi, everybody. This is Andy Marquette, and I am joined by my colleague and friend, Lise McTague, and we have a special guest, but first, we are Les Geek Out, the podcast where we talk about geekly, bi-weekly things all the time, every day, and any other time. In the studio, the virtual studio, we have Tara Scott. Ah, everybody!
Hello!
From the Lesbian Review and Smart Bitches Trashy Books. Some of you may know Tara. She's like the Lord God queen of book reviews and podcasting. So we're going to talk about gender and presentation of gender in media. And we thought Tara would be a really cool person to do that because Tara has had some conversations and has talked about stuff on social media with regard to gender presentation and gender. And we were just like, oh my God, let's bring Tara on. Okay. So what we're going to do
here is... It sounded exactly like that for the record.
it's so perfect. So what we're going to do here is we're going to like have kind of a multi-pronged conversation. So it's going to be set up more like a convo than like a panel because discussion can go in all kinds of different ways. So what we're going to do is we're going to start off with Lise. And then we'll go into Tara, and Tara's got a book she's going to tell you all about that's really awesome. And I'll just be here to sort of like be the peanut gallery so that I can like ask questions and that kind of thing. Is it okay with y'all if I set us up by kind of providing some kind of like overview definitions of sex and gender? Because a lot of people aren't really sure what those are and might be a little bit confused. Tara, so does that sound good?
Yeah, please.
Do it. Oh, my God. All right. Well, friends, I was trained in anthropology, so I have a very deep interest in sex and gender and sex and gender systems. And a lot of times when you hear people talking about sex, gender, they interchange the terms. And that's not really quite right. When you're talking about sex, if we're talking about sex and gender, sex is basically what you're assigned at birth, and that's based on the junk that you're born with, your reproductive organs, for example. And gender is the roles that society assigns you based on your sex assigned at birth. So gender is a construct, and it's also how you feel about yourself and how you present to the world. And some people they may not be born with a definitive sex. Some of their sex organs may not line up with what is expected biologically, and those people may be intersex. So sex is generally, though, is what you're assigned at birth and what you're born with, and gender is sort of what's imprinted on you as you go through your life. Now, some people, cisgender, do identify as male or female based on their junk. Others do not. They identify as non-binary. They identify as trans. In other words, friends, gender is actually a spectrum. Sex, not so much. But you can't conflate the two. They are related, but gender is not sex, and sex is not necessarily gender. Okay, so, Lise, I'm now going to turn this over to you because you were saying some really cool shit about butch and butch representation in media. So let's unpack that for a while. Talk about butch. What does that mean?
Oof, wow.
Okay, what does it mean for you? How's that?
Okay, good, because I was like, oh God, if I have to define butch for everyone, people are going to be so mad at me. So butch for me is one of those things. It's so hard to define, but you know it when you see it. You know, it's mm-hmm. like one of, if to me, it feels like one of those things. So to me, someone who is butch, and I'm going to talk in the general perspective from a female point of view, as opposed to like a male point of view, because I'm not particularly interested in butch and femme and how that breaks down amongst gay men. I'm more interested in the lady side of things. So, yes, my Freudian slip is showing.
The lady side of all the things.
Let's talk about the ladies.
So, yeah, butch to me is someone who is, you know, assigned female at birth, generally speaking, tends to be a cisgender woman who happens to portray herself or themselves along the more masculine spectrum of things. So I'm not talking about someone who is potentially non-binary or gender fluid, whose presentation may shift. In my case, you know, I mostly identify as a cisgender woman, but I present myself way down on the masculine side of things because that's what makes me happy. That's how I am comfortable. That's what I'm comfortable looking like. That's how I'm comfortable having people perceiving me. But I still consider myself a woman. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to leave it there for now. Because there are lots of other things that you can poke at that. But in general, broad strokes, that is my definition of butch. Now, other people's definition of butch may vary widely. And I would argue that if someone wants to call themselves butch and they look more feminine than I do, that is absolutely their prerogative. On the other hand, I'm going to argue that a lot of what is considered butch representation that we see in media is a whole load of crap, but we can unpack that one later.
We're going to be doing a lot of unpacking as opposed to packing. Tara, did you want to jump in here and talk a little bit about gender and presentation and representation?
Yes, I do. It's like, Andy, what way
asks all the easy questions.
I know, right? Yeah, I wonder if it's probably best for me to do similar to what Lise just did and actually talk about what my experience is with it, because I'm guessing that is part of why I was brought on the show, not just because I am a well-read person.
And generally awesome, but you know.
Oh, thank you. So for me, one of the fun games that I like to play with my coworkers is, hey, guess what my first picture looked like for when I started at this company. I'm not going to name the company that I work. And I like to joke that that looks like my Mormon cousin, because when I started working there 4 years ago, I had hair past my shoulders. I wore the typical business casual look for women. I wouldn't say it was particularly femmy. There was no real style to it, but it was just, you know, like slacks and blouses and that kind of thing, and makeup. And I figured out my bisexuality later than many, because I figured it out when I was about 32 33. So this was 4 years ago. Okay, so I was probably about 36, and I cut my hair a little shorter, and then I got a new pair of glasses, and then I cut my hair like right off, and then I got some men's shirts and got them tailored. And so, like, but, like, I kept the makeup because I fucking love makeup so much. I do not ask me how much money I spent on makeup, because I don't want to admit that. It's too much money. So for me, what really works is this kind of androgynous style. And that was kind of hard, because I did wonder, as a bisexual woman, like, is it okay for me to look androgynous, or am I expected to stay more on like the femmy side of things? You know, there's jokes about the bisexual haircut, which is like, you know, Korra from Legend of Korra. It's that, like, the bisexual bob, right? And it's like, I don't want the bisexual bob. I hate it. I hate it so much. I don't hate it on other people, but for me, I don't want that. And so I started looking for, like, what are the terms that work for me? And I looked at non-binary, and it's like, well, that doesn't feel right, because I don't feel like I live outside of the gender spectrum. And so then gender nonconforming felt pretty good. And then I also found gender queer. And so just the idea of, like, being able to play with gender, and, like, there are some days where I feel mostly female, and there are some days where I feel kind of in the middle, and some days where I feel a little more on the masculine side, but I feel almost more like I slide across the scale more than anything. And so for me, it can be really hard to find that experience in media. I've rarely seen that experience of somebody shifting kind of from day to day. I've seen it in a couple of books. The one that you said that I had a book that I want to talk about, that was there. And also, just in terms of if we're going to talk about media, I do want to give a shout out, like, for butch representation. If there's people that are still not quite sure. I mean, there's tons of butch femme romances out there, like mm-hmm. a billion of them. They're very easy to find. But if you want one of those like definitive books on the butch experience, I think The Swashbuckler by Lee Lynch does a beautiful job of really mm-hmm. digging into what did it mean to be butch in the 1950s when it was illegal to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that is not... I didn't find it to be a rough read. Now, that might also be because I am not butch. And so I've not really had to go through the same experiences that Frenchie does in that. But I do highly recommend that because it's just... I mean, Lee Lynch is a fucking goddess. She's so good.
She's so good. Absolutely. Lisa, I want to pivot back to you with regard to... You and I... We were talking about this in terms of an article we both read about butch representation in various media and how
yes.
butch kind of also exists on a spectrum, that there are different ways that butch women may think of themselves and also present. And you had made a comment about how Alex Danvers in Supergirl, you've seen comments about how she's considered butch in fandom. You want to like kind of poke at that a little bit and see where we go?
Yeah, sure. So I'm gonna back up a little bit even further than that and just look at sort of the general representation of lesbians on screen, which is mostly gonna end up being TV because we do tend to show up more in TV than we do in movies still. But by and large, when you see a lesbian on screen, she has long hair. She has makeup, she has pretty, pretty clothes. She is, in short, a femme.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the so-called butch representation that we get in visual media is sort of like two steps to the right of that uber, uber femme that we get to see. And it's like inching a little bit towards masculine. But for whatever reason, showrunners and the like seem to be afraid to give us someone who is truly butch. I mean, Alex Danvers, I suppose you could argue, is more butch than her sister in the show, Supergirl. Her sister, who is the aforementioned Supergirl. But that doesn't necessarily make her butch. I mean, she still wears what I would consider very feminine clothing, even though, shocking, sometimes it's blazers. She's also a federal agent. So yeah, of course she's wearing a fucking blazer, right? But she's wearing heels. She's wearing makeup. She's got the bisexual bob. She's not...
Oh my God.
She's so, not butch. She's just I've not.
I've never seen the show. So I just did a Google image search for Alex Danvers. And I am scrolling through... And, like, she's beautiful.
She is.
And she looks queer.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she can kick my ass any day of the week, but she is not butch.
No.
But maybe she thinks of herself as butch. We don't know.
No.
No, we don't. And that's actually one area where I think it's so difficult to really quantify our representation because... Unless we're reading someone's diary in a TV show, we don't get an internal monologue. So you're absolutely right. We don't know how Alex thinks of herself.
The only character I can think of is... and this was like a tiny guest spot.
Mm-hmm.
Not even like a full-fledged, we see this character regularly. But when Carmen Esposito shows up as Rosa's girlfriend on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Mm-hmm.
That was... And even then... I don't know for sure how she identifies. And so there still could be an argument that she's more androgynous than butch. It's really up to her what her label is.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say Carmen Esposito is more of a soft butch. If we're going to start slicing and dicing. But that's where it gets so difficult, right? I mean, and it really is.
Yeah.
It's that individual thing. And we're sitting here on the outside imposing our lived experience on the representation of somebody else. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, but Alex Danvers is not butch.
No. And now I'm thinking about, so I hadn't seen many lesbian movies, and then I saw one that basically ruined me. And I was like, nope, because I never wanted to see that kind of a gut punch again. And so have either of you seen High Art?
Oh, mm-hmm. A long, long time ago.
Yeah. So that was rough because, spoiler, the lesbian dies at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how weird.
But, right? It's so strange. But Ally Sheedy was clearly supposed to be the butch in that, which, again, I would call her androgynous at best. Her performance was amazing. Like, I remember thinking that, like, mm-hmm. no movement that she made was spare. But still, like, it's, she was clearly supposed to be this, like, mysterious butch woman that this sweet young girl falls for. And it's like, no. No. Mm-hmm. She's not that.
Well, and it's frustrating because, you know, just as lesbians have been dressed up to be palatable to the male gaze and to, mm-hmm. you know, the ability of straight women to see themselves in them, it feels like we can't get past this idea that women have to exist for the pleasure of somebody else on screen.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that just doesn't happen for dudes. And so we don't get the swagger. We don't get this, there's so much complexity when it comes to butches, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good thing, because we can be whatever the fuck we want, you know? I can take the good from each one and make it into something that is purely my own and that I feel comfortable with. And it's for me. It's not for what someone else thinks I should do or thinks I should look like. It's for me. But with female characters on screen don't get to do that.
Well, and I think even if you look in lesfic at all those billions of butch femme romances that I was talking about, and I am not going to name any names because I don't want to be an asshole. But it is not hard to throw a rock and find a butch femme romance where, like, all so many of the butches are the same. There doesn't get to be a complexity. It's they're the tough ones that mm-hmm. need to have their walls broken down. And it's like, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of nuance there. It's almost like there's only one true way to butch, and that's just not fair.
Mm-hmm.
There are some exceptions, but
there are. One of the things that I've seen a lot of in terms of representation of butch women specifically is that they're often equated with men, but not equal to men. So they're always on the losing side of, like, a quote unquote competition for a woman, right? Or they're somehow brutalized by men. And I'm thinking here, the movie that popped into my head was Boys Don't Cry with Hilary Swank. Was that the name of that movie?
Oh my god.
Yep.
But she played Tina Brandon Tina, who was trans, not necessarily not butch.
Right.
We don't know how Brandon identified before he started living his life as a man, and for all we know, he could have been living as a trans, as a butch lesbian. But in that case, Brandon was brutally raped and murdered, and that is based on a true story. And I'm old enough to remember when that actually happened, and it was absolutely horrifying because I present as more masculine, and Brandon was presenting as a man. But he didn't think of himself as a woman; he thought of himself as a man. But the stories and how homophobic and transphobic people reacted to him was that he was just a woman dressing up as a man to try to, like, score girls. I mean, that was part of the underlying subtext. And I think that subtext is actually lingers as part of what we perceive as butch culture. Like a butch, as you were saying, Tara, a butch character in books tends to be, like, you know, the player. That goes out and is, like, engaging, you know, having sex all the time and doesn't settle down with anybody until that one femme transforms her into the stay-at-home butch. And that is such a short-sighted way of looking at the complexity of gender and how people present and how they perform gender and how they feel comfortable with gender and what their expressions are. And so I would love to see many more butch characters who get the three-dimensional treatment in media. And Lise, you and I have had this discussion numerous times about how short-sighted media is in terms of butch lesbian representation and butch women in general. I happen to know some cisgender women who are on the butch side of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, though, and media does do good things with that. Think Starbuck from Battlestar Galactica, right?
Oh my God.
Yes, I mean, you cannot let me think throw about that a right stone now. In sci-fi and not find yourself a kick-ass butch straight woman. They're allowed to exist in good space.
Oh. That's a good point. Tara, Emily, did you have something?
Yeah, what's her name? In Edge of Tomorrow.
Yes! Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt. Oh character. My God, that, like, what a blessing that they run that yoga scene 3 times. God bless her arms and shoulders in that up dog.
And what about Sigourney Weaver's character in Aliens?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and let's talk Linda Hamilton's character in Terminator. These are some fucking badass butch women.
They are. But they're also essentially sexless in these.
That makes me think of something interesting. If the woman is cisgender and straight, they can butcher up a little bit. And in media, nobody's going to freak out. But if she's queer, that's a little too queer to have, like, somebody who identifies as butch and is also queer. What do you think about that? Is that, like, legit?
It's all about society's fucking safety blankets, right? Where it's like, it feels like they can get themselves so far, and then it's like, oh God, this feels scary. And they have to back it off. Either, you know, by killing the character, or having them decide that, no, they're into dudes after all, or, oh, hey, look, they got a makeover, and now they're pretty, pretty princesses. I mean, it's just...
How about Cara Dune in The Mandalorian?
Oh God, I love that character. That's a Gina.
Yeah, Gina her name? Carano.
I love her. Carano. Yeah, I love her character in that. She's a fucking badass, like mercenary, kicking ass all over the place, and we Ooh. Don't know a whole lot about her yet. Because we don't have a lot of her backstory, but I love how she inhabits that role. And she's played that role before. If you remember Deadpool, the first one, she played one of the villainesses in that final battle scene. She was on the bad guy side where she's just like kicking ass, taking names with snarky comments. And it's just amazing. I love her. Okay. I love when she inhabits those characters.
She was like an MMA fighter or something, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was. And there's a movie that she actually did. Y'all should see it. Tara, I think you'd be interested in it. And the name is like fucking escaping me. I'm going to look it up. So y'all just talk amongst yourselves.
Well, so the reason I brought her up is because they don't get into who she might be attracted to or anything like that. But I would not be surprised, although I would be absolutely delighted if it did come out that she was queer. Because she just like... She's kind
has
of
that energy, doesn't she?
Yeah, she has the energy. She has the haircut.
No, I don't know. That's
the movie. The movie I'm thinking of is called Haywire, and she plays kind of an assassin type, and it's from 2011. Yeah, so right. I think you can
Add
get
that
it on
to
Netflix.
The list.
I'll check.
I think I mean, you can get it on Netflix. Actually, this is a movie you and I might want to dissect, please.
Okay.
Because we get to see her do her mixed martial arts training and shit. It's an interesting, interesting movie, and it's told with interesting time frames, like flashbacks, but kind of flash forwards too. It's really interesting, and I saw it like in 2012, just like, this looks interesting, and I was watching it on, I don't remember, I think back in the day I might have rented it on DVD or something, and it was just like, wow! So I ended up like buying it because I really enjoy that movie. So Haywire, that's the name of the movie. Huh. Anyway, again, we're dealing with a potentially cisgender woman who may or may not be queer, but definitely has butch vibe. like Starbucks. Good one there in Battlestar Galactica.
And I mean, I was going to say, so Disney loves to do this kind of shit, right? Where you've got the subtext, so they don't have to come right out and say, oh, by the way, your favorite character is queer or is straight, but they can have people who are looking for the subtext feel like they're being thrown a bone. I don't know. I mean, so on the one hand, it's I love that we get to see these characters. On the other, it disappoints me when we don't get that payoff. It's the whole Rizzolian Isles crap all over again. Jane Rizzoli, not Butch.
No.
But queer-ish.
I think my problem with Disney is that they will let that subtext ride until there's just enough fandom that's dying for it that they just like write in these bullshit boyfriends.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Or
girlfriends on the opposite, because like it happened with the latest Star Wars trilogy where it's like, no, stop writing Finn and Poe kissing in stories. Get off Archive of Our Own. We have these two love interests for them. And it's like, fuck off. Let people write whatever fanfic they want. Just let them kiss, you cowards. Same goes for Once Upon a Time.
Oh, yes.
Right? Again.
Thank you.
Fuck off. Let them kiss.
But it's interesting to me how, you know, the Bury the Gays trope kind of plays out with specifically butch-coded characters. I mean, it's interesting and tragic because, I mean, oftentimes these butch-coded characters tend to be, like, really two-dimensional, like the player, the predator.
She's
predatory towards other women, and she's then some, you know, maybe dies in some stupid accident or is murdered by assholes, you know, men who are trying to teach her a lesson and to know her place in the binary, basically. That's how I read that.
So here's a question. So we've been talking a lot about butch characters, and I think part of that is because even though there is not that much for us to go on, there's more than there are for genderqueer characters, right?
Yes, let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, and I suppose my question is, and I already have, I know what my answer is, but when is no rep worse than bad rep? Or when is rep worse than no rep?
That's a really good question. Tara?
I would say that for me, no rep was hard because I had literally nothing to look to. And I had nobody in my like actual physical life. And I didn't know if I had any in my like virtual life because I'm connected to so many people through the lesbian community now. And I think what really helped me, and when I finally was like, oh, a term that makes sense for me, was seeing an interview that Megan Ulrich did. So she's an author with Bold Strokes, and she identifies as genderqueer. And I'm like, what's this? And I went down a Google rabbit hole and was like, holy shit. So, I mean, I suppose I would rather have, like, looking back at how that went, I'm kind of okay with how that went, because if I only would have read bad rep, that sucks too. I mean, I can say, you know, coming into reading lesfic, like 8 or 9 years ago, most of the bisexual rep I saw was fucking terrible. It was
terrible. Just brutal. Terrible.
It was all like the bisexual cheating ex, the evil bisexual who left me for a man. She was probably not actually ever into women in the first place. And so that was really hurtful. And I did end up seeing some of that attitude reflected in readers occasionally. I don't see it that often anymore. I think the community's come a long way, thank goodness.
And I think a lot of people are calling people out on it too. I see that a lot more than I used to.
Yes. Yeah, it's really heartening to know that when there's some kind of biphobic bullshit happening in a Facebook group, when I see like 5 or 6 really prominent authors that will speak out about it and say, like, not in my virtual living room, you can go pound sand.
I think, too, we were talking about this earlier, about how, and Terry, you may be able to speak to this as well, is that when I was coming of age, there wasn't language for how I expressed or felt. Like, I had lesbian, gay, and queer, but queer to the generation just in front of me is a slur. It's derogatory. And yet for me, during the 90s and the 2000s, especially, queer really kind of encapsulated how I felt about myself. And so did gender nonconforming. And I didn't have that language when I was coming of age. We didn't have that language. So I am so gratified that we have it now. And I love to see younger people who have the language to help express how they feel and who they think they are. Yeah. And who they are. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I came late to gender nonconforming.
Oh, no.
But it I feel like queer/gender nonconforming fits me as I am right now. Did you want to pop in on that?
Oh, I think we lost Tara.
Uh-oh. Okay, well, Lee.
Or she's holding really, really still. Well, I think it's interesting what you were saying about what you're exposed to when you're younger. Because there are days when I think that if I'd been born 10, 15 years later, that I might be a trans man.
Uh-huh.
Just because, when I was younger, I feel like that really would have spoken to me very deeply. But right. I didn't have any kind of representation. I didn't have anything to go toward with that sort of thing. I mean, the only people you saw who passed as not their gender were drag queens, right?
Right, right.
And I definitely knew that wasn't right. But, so what was left for me was butch lesbian. And it's a label that feels comfortable now. And if you ask me today, do I want to be a man? The answer is most of the time, no. But 15 years ago, I don't know, man. I probably could have swung that. Yeah, could have been.
Could have swung that. Mm-hmm. So did you want to stop a minute, see if we can get Tara back?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, I'm going to stop right here.
Okay.
All right, you guys, we lost Tara for a minute, but she's back. Dun-da-da. So Tara, just to recap quickly, the language that I had growing up was not, dare I say, inclusive. And so I didn't have terms like gender nonconforming or queer, because the generation right in front of me, queer was a horrific slur, even though it kind of I feel like it fits me more so than other terminology. Was that your experience as you were kind of figuring out where you were? And we're all still figuring it out, right? I mean, this is a journey.
Yeah, so like I said, I didn't start figuring out any aspect of my queerness, whether it was my sexual orientation or my gender, my gender identity and how I like to present. Gender presentation was what I was looking for, and I stumbled over four different other things first. Mm-hmm. And I think part of why I didn't figure any of that out is because when I was in high school, I was in an evangelical church, which during the 90s is the height of the purity culture movement and very highly entrenched in very binary, very heteronormative, very the man is the head of the household and women are gonna pump out babies and all that bullshit. I say having pumped out a couple of babies who I love, but so it was really, it wasn't possible for me to access. Although when I look back, I think it's hilarious because through high school, I lived in flannel shirts and docks. That was just, but it was also the 90s and grunge. Right. And so
everybody wore that.
Yeah.
It was the perfect outfit for my teenage years for sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the slur where I grew up, and I think part of why queer feels super comfortable to me is I never heard it used as a slur. Gay was the slur at my high school. That's so gay. You're so gay. And so the idea of being gay was terrible, especially in a Baptist church.
Mm-hmm.
That was not cool. And so it's been interesting also bringing my parents along for this journey. Because my parents are still in the church. I am not. My dad was a deacon for many years. But at the same time, like when I went to visit them, maybe it was 2 summers ago? Yeah, it was 2 summers ago. And I had bought all these shirts from Old Navy, and they were men's shirts that I had brought to a place to get them tailored, and I wasn't happy with how they did it. And my dad has a few weird hobbies, but the relevant one in this case is that he does tailoring for War of 1812 reenactors. That's as he himself is a War of 1812 reenactor. That was the hobby when I was growing up. So yes, very cool, normal.
That's kind of awesome, Tara.
Person
I'm
growing
sorry,
up here.
Fucking awesome.
Hit like, and honestly, like his work is beautiful because he, anything that like you can see looking at somebody wearing it, he hand sews. So like all that lace and all of that on. Yeah. He is a talented tailor. So I was like, Dad, I'm not happy with the job this person did with these shirts. Can you help me? And he did. He doesn't understand. And my mom asked me like, do you think you're a man? And I'm like, no, Mom, I'm not transitioning. These are just the clothes that I feel good in. And
but I think that's a good conversation though to have with people in your life who are having trouble maybe understanding.
Yeah. Because like I said, it wasn't that long ago. Like I really only felt like I finally found the gender presentation that feels comfortable to me and feels right. Mm-hmm. And like I have a style now. And like that really only happened in the last 2.5 years. And so even like my oldest daughter, who is 8, absolutely remembers me with long hair.
Wow.
And my youngest daughter doesn't quite remember, but she's seen photos. And so like we would go to the mall and my oldest, I remember her saying, you should get that dress. And she pointed to this like really beautiful dress in the window. And I said, I'm not getting that dress. And she's like, why? And I said, I don't feel good when I wear dresses. And she said, but I feel good when I wear dresses. And I said, well, that's great.
Excellent.
Absolutely. You should wear. Yeah. Right. Wear what makes you feel good. I'm going to wear what makes me feel good.
See, my problem is that I prefer a masculine gender expression, but I have a very feminine body.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a hard time reconciling those two. Like you were talking earlier about, you know, did you have permission to change your look?
Mm.
And I went through a similar thing when I started working in a professional position, where all of a sudden, you know, the khakis and polo shirts that I wore when I worked retail aren't going to fly as a professional librarian. And I had to really negotiate with myself to allow myself to wear clothing that fits the body that I have, but would somehow at least come close to matching the presentation that I prefer. And that took a while. And it still doesn't always feel right. I mean, the only time I wear, well, when I'm dressing the way I am comfortable, I am wearing one article of women's clothing, and that's my bra. Mm-hmm. When I'm dressed for work, when we can actually go there, you know, I wear pants and shirts that are tailored for women because that's what looks good on my body. That's what looks professional. But I also wear blazers and I wear color palettes and patterns that are more towards the masculine side of them. But it took me a long time and a lot of negotiation and having to talk myself down from some serious panic attacks before I could leave the house wearing something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that is just, you know, that's one of the things that I struggle with and why I sometimes wonder if I'm maybe more along the transgender spectrum of things, because my body and I don't always agree. My image of myself in my head does not match what's going on outside.
I want to direct both of you to a model, an androgynous model who calls themselves Rain Dove.
Oh yeah.
You can find them on Instagram, and they do these photos where they're dressed as, they're presenting as feminine, and they juxtapose the masculine dress and presentation, and it's fascinating to look at the reactions. And that's why they do it, is because they're looking to see what the reactions are, but they definitely do not inhabit a binary. And I would argue that Raindev is primarily, I think they identify as non-binary and genderqueer, but I'm not certain of that. But I follow them on Instagram, and I mean, they're beautiful. They're a beautiful human being, regardless of how they're presenting. And the messaging that they put on their Instagram, it's really uplifting and really powerful. So I highly recommend that if you're not on Instagram, get on Instagram and follow Raindev. Like, so
I'm literally on there right now.
Right on.
Yep. Me too.
Okay.
Pause for an Instagram break. No, just kidding.
And also, Lise, I want to bring up, we were talking about butch representation. Let's bring up, you brought up, I'm going to turn it over to you, Scorpia. And tell people where Scorpia is from and what her deal is.
Yes. Okay. So Scorpia is from She-Ra and the Princesses of Power. That would be the more recent She-Ra reboot by our queen and goddess, Noelle Stevenson.
Yes.
And Scorpia is, well, she's a woman scorpion princess hybrid, which, if you haven't seen the show, isn't going to make any sense. But I would argue that Scorpia is some of the best butch representation in media right now.
I mean, you
look at the way she's portrayed in the show, and she is, I mean, she's definitely got that dykey shit going, right? I mean, she's got the short hair. She's got this, like, you know, she's this coded, broad sort of... Yeah, powerful energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yet, she's allowed a full range of human emotions. She, you know, she just really wants some friends and people to hang out with, and spend so much time trying to get Catra to be that mm-hmm. for her. And she's very supportive, even though she's technically a bad guy. And she's just, I mean, she's upbeat, and she's just... I love her so much, because she's visually coded as, like, as butch as I pretty much, I think yeah. I've seen, yes, butch and queer as I've seen on the screen. And yet she gets to subvert a lot of the butch lesbian tropes and be just a fully realized mm-hmm. human being. Mm-hmm. And yes, mm-hmm. I love her so much. And
I love Scorpia too.
She's great.
Have you been watching She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, Tara?
I've seen the first season, and it was wonderful.
Just, we highly recommend that you keep going.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
I also, at this point, I want to talk, Tara, you had a book you said you read that really kind of got at what we're talking about, like this kind of representation that sort of deals with less binary and less stereotypical, and kind of like gets into other kinds of cool representation. Can you enlighten us?
Hell yeah, I can.
Sweet.
But first, I'm going to do the thing that I should have done before, but I only just had the idea because I'm a brilliant person. I'm going to grab the blurb so that I can read the blurb to y'all, so you can hear what this book has going on, because I tried describing it to a coworker today. I finished reading this book 2 evenings ago, and I have recommended it to like 9 people since then. I'm like, you have to go get this book. So it is called The Mermaid, the Witch, and the Sea by Maggie Takuda Hall. It is a YA fantasy, which I don't typically go for YA, and I didn't actually realize when I requested this one from NetGalley, and I'm so, so, so glad that I did. Mm-hmm. So here is the blurb. Aboard the pirate ship Dove, Flora the girl takes on the identity of Florian the man to earn the respect and protection of the crew. For Flora, former starving urchin, the brutal life of a pirate is about survival. Don't trust, don't stick out, and don't feel. But on this voyage, Flora is drawn to the Lady Evelyn Hasegawa, who is headed to an arranged marriage she dreads. Flora doesn't expect to be taken under Evelyn's wing, and Evelyn doesn't expect to find such a deep bond with the pirate Florian. Neither expects to fall in love. Soon the unlikely pair set in motion a wild escape that will free a captured mermaid coveted for her blood and involve the mysterious pirate supreme, an opportunistic witch, double agents, and the all-encompassing sea itself. Or sea herself, because the sea is a woman.
Right.
Holy shit, this book is so good.
Oh my god. Okay, you have me so at pirate, good. But talk to us about the gender representation in here.
So, the Pirate Supreme is non-binary and only ever talked about with they pronouns, and we never know what, you know, what is in their pants, nor do we need to. And I think that is fabulous. Why did I close my Kindle app? I'm the worst at this. Oh my god. I was looking for passages. The reason I'm berating myself is that I took so many notes when I was reading this book, both because it's like, it's lyrical and it's beautiful. And there was just a lot of stuff that like punched me in the gut. The characters are well done. But the thing that I really loved and found so validating was reading about Florian or whatever. And, you know, in their case, it really was about becoming a man for safety because, you know, she's part of the pirate's crew. And so it is that like, it was the first mate's idea. You have to do this if you want to be safe.
And isn't that interesting? And that's something for another discussion, is how in order to be safe, you have to code male. But you're not safe if you're butch and coded male. If you're a butch woman and coded male, you're not safe. That's a really interesting double standard there.
We should unpack the woman dressed as a man trope at some point, because
there's totally a lot of stuff that going on and there. Tara, I would love to come on with us that, because she's read all those books. Uh-huh.
I have read all those books. I can absolutely come back. And I think this one is a little different, especially when you get to other parts. I apologize. I am scrolling because there's a...
The cool thing that you're talking about here is how the character is not coded male or female.
And the pronouns switch fairly frequently. Like when Flora is Flora, she's a she. Uh-huh. When Flora is Florian, he's a he. And you kind of have to pay attention because it does sort of flip here and there. And later on, when Evelyn, Lady Hasegawa, sort of figures it out, you know, she says, well, do you like to use she or he or they? And at that point, you know, Flora had gone through so much of her journey that she's like, it doesn't matter because they're all true. Which
that's,
I thought,
so interesting. Wow.
Was really lovely. But there was this one, it's a tiny snippet, but it really kind of punched me in the gut because it's not super far into the book. But it says, the spell of safety Florian cast over her life was slipping, and yet she did not seem to be a female anymore either. The loss stung. She was neither, it seemed, or at least she didn't reap the benefit of either.
Oh my god. And I thought there was that.
Right? Like there's just something so powerful about that. And then later on towards the end, she says, yes, she was an orphan, a sister, a pirate, a girl, and also a boy. But more importantly, she was a person who sought power to protect those she loved, including herself or himself. Both were equally true to her. Neither told the whole story.
That is,
and so it's this lovely, like, I think in those two just little snippets, it really kind of tells those parts of the journey where it, like, it starts with the activating event of how she was able to be perceived as a man, to this complication of, like, I feel like I don't win no matter what, to actually I love myself, I am a whole person, all of this is me. And again, like, as this person who slides along the gender spectrum from day to day, it was just so wonderful. So everybody, like, just go get this book. It comes out on May 5th.
Give us the title again.
Read it. Come fangirl with me. It is The Mermaid, Witch, and the Sea.
Love it. Lise, did you want to throw in here?
No, I'm just kind of speechless. That was a couple of incredible passages. Holy shit.
We got to read this. We should read this and bring Tara back and talk about this too.
Yay! Yes.
I mean, for real. Yes. And let's unpack the shit out of it. I mean, this is one of the things that we try to do on Les Geek Out, is just like unpack subtext and text and how does this work in terms of gender and sexuality and sexual orientation and identity. And I, you know, we're now at 50 minutes. So Lisa, I'm going to wrap us up. We've got a shout out there from Tara. Did you have a shout out that you wanted to?
I do, but it's silly.
Nothing is silly.
So my wife and I have started playing this silly little video game. It's called Terraria or Terraria. Anyway, it's kind of like a two-dimensional Minecraft, uh-huh. And it's just, you're just exploring this world, and we can do two-player cooperative and play it together, and it's just been a really fun time, because we can go out, and we can explore shit, and we don't have to leave our house, because we can't right now. but yeah, it's called Terraria, T-E-R-R-A-R-I-A.
That sounds fun.
That's it. That's on the Xbox and a bunch of other platforms, but yeah, it's just a fun little game that we've been spending, like it's one of those games where we're like, okay, we're just gonna spend 30 minutes and then go make dinner,
and
then we're like, okay, but no, we just have to excavate this one area. And oh hey, cool, I just found this other cave, we should go check that out. Oh no, we're out of rope, we need to go chop down some trees so we can go back to our hideout and make some rope and come back. And that's why dinner was 20 minutes late tonight.
Aren't they old enough to feed themselves anyway?
Oh my god.
Technically, yes.
Okay, so Tara, I know you did a shout out with that book, but did you have any other shout outs, like, you know, that you're doing in the era of COVID with your family, or any shows that you're watching or things that you're doing?
Yes. So I was kind of overwhelmed with all this COVID stuff. Surprise! A person with anxiety, right? Overwhelmed in a global pandemic, when like pandemics were my literal nightmare fuel. So I was like, what am I going to do with this? And I was like, fuck it. I'm going to read a Christmas book, because that's what I want to do.
Awesome.
And Chelsea M. Cameron released a book over the holidays that I didn't have time to read, and it's called Christmas in Maine, I-N-N, because it's a pun on how it takes place at an inn. I hate puns so much, but I love this book equally. And I love this book as much as I hate puns. And I, also part of why I wanted that one specifically is that she writes some of my favorite comfort reading, because mm-hmm. I always like the characters. She writes great antagonism. This is an enemies to lovers book. They're always like, the chemistry is great, and I never ever there's no angst. They're like the fluffiest cotton candy, and it just always makes me happy. And this book actually has a non-binary demi girl who presents much more feminine, but shifts between she and they pronouns. And mm-hmm. I really loved how that was handled, because actually the enemy that she falls for is a coworker, who are kind of like trapped together at this inn that the coworker's family owns. And I loved how sensitive that love interest is, because, you know, when they're at work, she just wears a pin. She wears a pronoun pin for whatever she wants to be. And I'm just going to stick with she throughout for simplicity, and that's okay. Also the pronoun that's in the blurb. So that character will just, if she feels like a she that day, will wear a she pin. If they feel like a they that day, they wear a they pin. Mm-hmm. But that's not accessible when they're in this like big fucking family Christmas scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead, the other character is like, "Hey, how are you feeling today? Do you need me to tell my family that you're a they today?" And I was like, shut up, that's so cute.
That was so damn cute. Oh my god, what's the name of it again?
Christmas in Maine by Chelsea M. Cameron. Highly recommend it.
I love it.
It's
see, look, and that fits into our theme, like the gender non-conforming thing. I love it, love it. See, I love having you on, Tara, because you always have these awesome recommendations for reading. I'm going to do a shout out. I'm sorry, but COVID was hitting just as this movie came out. I finally saw Birds of Prey, The Emancipation of Harley Quinn, and I fucking loved it. I loved it so much, I bought that bitch, and I'm going to watch it again and again and again.
If you loved that, I have to ask. So for me, I am a sweet baby and can't handle a lot of violence. So I found myself looking away a lot. But have you seen the TV show Harley Quinn?
I have not yet.
No. Oh my god. Go get that show. It is so fucking good. It is so funny. There is so much swearing. It is so violent. We had to pause every time my kids came down the stairs and like, oh, you're watching a cartoon. We're not, like, not for you. And apparently in season two, Harley and Ivy are going to get together.
Yeah, there's a comic too that Harley Quinn and Ivy get together. And I just fucking love the idea of Harley Quinn being queer. I just love that character. And I thought that, I don't know, her essence was so captured in this movie. So we can talk more about it later, Lise. But God, it was amazing. And I'm definitely going to make a whole bunch of popcorn and watch it again because there's so much you miss. There's a lot of dialogue and asides and shit. And I just loved it. Loved it! It's amazing and feminist as fuck. So yeah, that's my shout out. All right. Lise, you got any final thoughts?
I'm thotted out.
All right. Let's do a shout out. Tara, thank you so much for joining us again. I want to make you a regular because I love you. So it does sound like kind of...
There you go. I can come back anytime. That is not a problem.
Sweet. All right, friends. We are Les Geek Out. I am Andy Marquette, joined by my colleague and friend Lise McTagg. And this is our geekly bi-weekly just geek out over everything. And today's topic was gender, which of course will come up all the time in future shows and has come up in previous shows. You can find us online on our website at lesgeekoutcast.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter, LGO Podcast. We are here for you, friends, in the COVID crisis and whatever the hell. And if you have anything you want to talk about, anything you think we should check out, or if you even want to be on the show, what the hell, just give us, you know, contact us. Love you, mean it, and we will see you in a couple of weeks. Everybody take care, and please be safe.
Peace.
All right, now's the time when we just fuck around. What are you cooking, Tara? Like, what have you cooked? Give us a recipe or something.
Have I cooked? Okay, so...
Or Neil, what has he cooked? What have you done? Tell us everything.
I've been roasting a lot of duck.
Nice.
Because not only is it delicious, but then you get all the fat that you can use to, like, roast potatoes, which...
Good point.
My 8-year-old calls duck fat roasted potatoes. She refers to them as junior hash browns, which I kind of find offensive, but... She can't help it because she's 8, but I'm like, what the fuck, dude? This is like fancy shit here that I make.
No, these are senior hash browns. Come on.
Right at
these are fucking duck fat senior. What?
These are like the king of hash browns.
What have you been cooking, Lise? Anything?
Well, not duck, since we do a mostly vegetarian household. Well, mostly. So it's interesting. The kids are old enough to cook for themselves, and so they've been requesting more meat, which we will provide for them, but they have to cook it.
Mm.
So that's the deal. And also, I have now added on to that and clean up after themselves for it, because I am done cleaning up the meat greasy. I've been vegetarian for a few years now, and like the longer it's been since I've eaten meat...
Mm.
Just the grosser it seems to me. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. it's like, and they're 15 and 17. They can clean up after themselves. That's nope. This is for you.
Mm-hmm.
you do you.
Yeah, yeah.
Over there.
I clean as I go. I clean as I go when I cook. I just got a cool recipe from my colleague in crime, RG Emmanuel. You know, mm-hmm. RG's a trained chef. And she's like, I got this weird but awesome, it turned out awesome recipe. Mac and cheese, you know, Southern style, only made with hominy.
Oh.
And I'll bet you can mess with it, Lise, and use, like, vegan cheese or some kind of other thing. I'll bet you could do
that. No. We're not non-dairy.
I will totally send you that recipe. You should see.
We have a cheese bucket in our fridge.
Oh, my God. I will send you this recipe. I'm going to try it.
Sweet.
I'm sending it to you. Do you want it, Tara? I'll send it to you, too, if you want to give it a shot.
No, I don't need cheese.
I think it's
gross.
Okay, no, that's cool, whatever.
I don't know why. And I've had a lot of people who are like, how can you not like cheese? And I'm like, I don't know, dude, just have my share.
That's fine. You know, some people just don't like cheese, whatever. That's just how it works out. And so, anyway. All right, cool. But if I find any duck recipes without cheese, I'm sending them to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you find good stir fry recipes that are easy and don't require a billion D ingredients, that is also good. Because I've been doing a lot of quick stir fries. Just because, like, it's easy way to eat a buttload of vegetables.
Same.
Mm-hmm.
And on that note, buttload, I'm going to stop my recording.
Always stop recording on buttload.